Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Dan Altman thing bugs me. You're going to be a basketball coach. You're in business to win basketball games, but you also should be in business to kind of grow your team up. And if the problem is that the Oregon basketball team is immature and Dana Altman's problem is that he doesn't trust his players enough to go to the post-game news conference, then to me that's a coaching issue, isn't it? I don't know. Lindsey Schnell, USA Today, joining us. How are you, Lindsey Schnell?
I'm good. I hope we're not going to talk about Oregon men's basketball, though, because I've only watched like 5 minutes, and it was ugly, and I had to turn off the TV.
Let me ask you a question about post-game. I know as media members, we probably care more than the general public when a coach doesn't send players out. But third time in 11 games that Dana Altman has said no players available after a bad loss. That's poor form.
I completely agree. You are a spokesperson for the university, athletes and coaches, and that's part of how it goes. You know, I always thought it was weird as when I was a sports writer, specifically I felt this a lot at Oregon when I would say, hey, I was hoping to talk to this or that player because I'm writing a story on so-and-so. And the sports information director, which is like the PR person, would say, okay, well, I'll ask if they want to do it. And I always thought, who's the adult here? Can you just tell them to talk to their reporter? Because most of the time, it's not a controversial issue. If you're about to write something really controversial or maybe something that involves the legal system, I understand hesitation there. But, hey, you guys shot the ball awful. Like, they should be able to answer for that.
Should handle that one. Let's talk about the difference between the men's game and the women's game at the college level. I saw the Oregon State Civil War game on Monday night and was just blown away at the interaction and the engagement that the players have with fans in the women's game. You've been there all along. Is that part of how they're growing the game, or what's the secret there?
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think you see that at women's sports across the board. It's certainly not just in basketball. You know, at Oregon State, for example, the gymnastics team has some amazing interaction with their fans after all their meets, and, you know, that's a top 10 program, and they have been for a long time. All the little kids get to go down for a dance party on the floor mat. Softball has always been like that. I think that it's just die-hard male fans are just, they're in it because they want to see the success, whereas a lot of times with women's teams, because they are out in the community more, you find that fans want to engage because they have a relationship with the players. And again, this is across all women's sports. You know, when you hear fans talk about their women's team, they'll say, like, our girls or my girls. There's just more of a connection. So I think it's awesome, and I think our state has supported women's basketball and girls' basketball for a long time. I mean, when Brad Smith and Carl Tinsley were winning state titles left and right at Oregon City, they were selling out the gym. So I think it's really cool to see what Oregon State and Oregon are doing this year, and the fact that the fans get to be so close to them while they do it makes it even better.
Lindsey Schnell, USA Today, is with us. You were at Oregon State and covering Oregon State when nobody was going to games. What was that like versus what you saw on Monday night at Gill?
It was interesting. You know, the thing is, though, very early on, even when Oregon State was losing a ton early on in Scott Ruick's tenure, they were in a lot of games. And one thing that's cool about the fan community in Corvallis is that they love basketball, period, because there's a lot of people still left over from the Ralph Miller era, and they like good basketball. So I think you could see early on that if the women eventually put a product on the floor, people would come. And even early on when their attendance wasn't great, the people who were there saw the building blocks and knew, okay, if we just get a couple players, we're going to be able to win games. So I'm just not surprised. I mean, I've known Scott for a really long time. I've been watching him coach for like 15 years up close. One of my best friends from high school was the point guard on his national championship team at George Fox. And I watched a lot of George Fox games, and they used to pack the gym at Fox too. So he just puts a product on the floor that makes people want to watch and makes people want to cheer.
Lindsay Schnell, USA Today, is with us. Lindsay, Kelly Graves in Oregon left very disappointed. Obviously, the injury that they had on Monday night was a scary one for them. Looks like Ruthie will be okay. These two teams, which one of these two teams should want a rubber match game more?
That's a great question. I would say that if Oregon State gets that game, that's just going to help their RPI, which is huge in the women's game when you talk about seeding for the tournament. But I think that Oregon also wants to prove to people that maybe Monday night was a fluke, and that they are, that the team we saw at Stanford when they blew out the Cardinal by 40 points is actually who they want and not who they were Monday night. But at the same time, I think that Oregon State would also like to prove that it can beat the Ducks even when Ruthie Hebert is playing the entire game for Oregon.
Yeah, I want them both at full strength, and I want them in Vegas on that Sunday night nationally televised championship game. How cool a moment would that be for the state of Oregon?
I mean, it would be awesome, and it's what I've wanted forever. You know, it's been so cool to watch both these programs, especially Oregon State, because that was arguably the worst job in America when Scott got there. Because our state and the Northwest in general have produced a lot of really talented players, and they always went back east. There's a few playing back east right now. Shoni Schimmel is a great example. It didn't make sense for her to stay at either in-state program because they weren't good. And the Pac-12, really outside of Stanford, wasn't that good. So the way that the Pac-12 over the last 7 to 10 years has really taken a step up, and especially the last 5 years, is awesome. And I think it's so great that now kids in our state and kids in the Northwest see Oregon and Oregon State, and they think, I want to play at those schools. Gabby Hansen, who played at Oregon State, was a huge part of their resurgence, best defender in the Scott Ruick era, went to the Final Four. She tweeted the other night during the game that when she was growing up, all she ever wanted was to play at Stanford because what she saw was a good product that had fan support. And she said watching Monday night on ESPN and knowing that there were little girls then who were watching her school, Oregon State, put that same environment and product on the floor and thinking, I want to play at OSU, that it just made her really emotional.
I've heard from a lot of different people. I've heard from people who think that, you know, Kelly Graves is – got the future of women's college basketball in this state lined up. I've heard other people say all Scott Ruick does is win. If you're buying stock in one of these programs long term, which one has staying power?
Well, I don't know why you have to pick one, but I'm going to pick Oregon State because I have watched Scott win games and be in games that he has no business being in because he just outcoaches people left and right. They don't have, you know, Oregon State, for all the success they've had the last few years under him, they've never had a McDonald's All-American. They're going to get their first one next year, a girl that's coming in from the Midwest. They don't get, you know, the kids that score. They don't have a Kelsey Plum, you know, who was rewriting the scoring record book. So I've watched him win with talent, but less superstar talent because they have such a good game plan and he puts people in a position to succeed. So, I mean, I'm taking Oregon State all day long, but I think what Kelly Graves said after Monday night was very true, that neither program's going anywhere, and that's awesome.
Lindsay Schnell with us, USA Today. Lindsay, I know, you know, we talk a lot about other people and what does this game mean to kids in the state or players on both teams. But personally for you, like, you are a woman. You have watched Oregon State, you know, build a program. You're watching Oregon build a program. What's it been like for you to watch 20,000 fans in this state between Monday's game and Friday's game, you know, go to see a women's basketball game that was really well played and you know, both teams won one?
I mean, for me, and I said this last week when I read your column that previewed the series, you know, it made me emotional. Like, I had tears in my eyes reading that because that was all I ever wanted. I've been a huge women's basketball fan my entire life. You know, I read Pat Summitt's first book until it literally, like, it's fallen apart. I still have it because it's signed, but I can't really read it anymore because I might lose pages. And what's cool for me is now seeing people appreciate it who maybe didn't give it the time or just didn't pay attention to it before or thought it was an unworthy product. Now I think those people are being proven wrong, but there's not this attitude, oh yeah, we were right the whole time. People in women's basketball aren't saying that. They're just like, hey, welcome to the party. And for me, you know, knowing Scott and his family really well, just being around that program and seeing how bad it was early on, it's incredible, you know, what they've done. And the other thing is that as an alum, you know, or I've been a women's basketball fan since I stepped on campus as a freshman in 2005. I never felt that about football, about men's basketball, because from the get-go, I covered them. I was a media member, and I just never felt that attachment. And so when Oregon State went to the Final Four a few years ago, I was in a hotel room in Philadelphia losing my mind. And that was the first time I really understood what it means to feel part of a community and be proud of your school and your team. And I said to Michaela Pivick's dad a couple weeks ago, I met him at the Utah game, and said, you know, I just want you to know the way that your daughter plays, the way that this team plays, it makes me so proud to be an alum. And I think one reason that people have really rallied behind Oregon State in particular is, outside of baseball, which has been somewhat complicated because of the Luke Heimlich stuff, there hasn't been a program that fans really could attach themselves to and, you know, feel pride in the athletic department, because they've been so starved for success, particularly with football and men's basketball. So for me, being in that environment was amazing. And just knowing that, I think that fan support is here to stay, and to see ESPN say all these awesome things, you know, I taped the game, I came home and watched it. I've actually watched it twice since Monday night, and the way that they appreciate it. I'm a junkie, okay? I'm really trying to figure out what went
well. Funny? You know what's funny for me is if this were a men's program, okay, and as a columnist, I can't be everywhere. I'm not the beat reporter, but often the teams and coaches don't get that. When I walk through the doors, I'll get a hard time from a coach if I haven't seen him in a while, or his team hasn't played well and I haven't been around because he's not playing well. I'm not going to the games.
Right.
I showed up the other night, and the same thing happened at the Final Four. I had not covered them all season. I show up to the Final Four, the national anthem is being played, and Scott Ruick turns around to me and says, hey, thanks for being here. Like, he was just glad I was there to help tell that story, and he wasn't, like, holding any ill will. Like, I got to be honest, if it were Dana Altman or Wayne Tinkle or anybody else, I think they would have gone, hey, where have you been all year? Oh, I get it. You show up now when we're winning. But I think that they're just happy that people are paying attention.
Yeah, I think, too, that anyone who works in not football, men's basketball, and maybe baseball, you know, kind of depends on where you are with baseball, they understand where they fall in the hierarchy. And they know that they're not going to get the attention of those programs. And so I think that they are more grateful. That's another reason I really like them. You know, you always see that with track and field, too. It's funny. Covering track and field is amazing because they're so excited to talk to the media that it makes your job easier and more fun. I do have to say, John, that it's funny you say, you know, that you don't get a hard time, because one person who does give me a hard time if I'm not at Oregon State regularly to watch women's basketball games is Jonathan Casey, Pat Casey's oldest son, who is the biggest OSU women's basketball fan I've met. He sits in the front row right behind the bench, and every time I see him, he's like, so, Lindsay, I noticed you weren't here last week. You know, why weren't you here? We always talk about who our favorite players are, score prediction, everything. So I'm glad you had a positive experience, but I just want you to know that some people do notice when others aren't in the building.
Lindsay Schnell, USA Today, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Of course. I love all this women's basketball talk. Keep it up.
We'll do it. We'll do it. There's Lindsay Schnell. Make sure you get a podcast of that if you tuned in late. Ken Go of the Oregonian is next to talk about fiasco in track and field and his thoughts on football. Is Oregon State flying under the radar just Jonathan Smith's personality, or should Beaver fans be troubled this program is, again, headed in the wrong direction? We'll talk about it with Go next. A lot to talk about today. I am broadcasting from the Oregon Convention Center. Right next door to us, they've got one of those golf batting cage style places where the guys can step up with the driver and hit the golf ball right into the wall. We're going to be talking with Chris Rogers of the Reserve Golf Course coming up in about 10 minutes. And we'll talk to him about my favorite golf course and what's going on out there. I heard they got some new technology that I need to try out at the Reserve. But Ken Go of the Oregonian is joining us now. Ken, what's up, man?
I'm always last to know, John. I depend on you to tell me what's up.
I have so many things I want to pepper you with. Can I just go rapid fire?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's start Dana Altman. Third time in 11 games. He doesn't send players out after the game. Is that poor form, or is... What do you make of that?
I think there's a couple things going on there. First of all, I think University of Oregon is trying to control its own message. Oregon has its own in-house sports writer. That's the way they want to be portrayed in the media. The independent media, those of us left in mainstream journalism, do not necessarily always portray the Ducks the way they want to be portrayed. So I think they don't feel like they have any vested interest in playing ball with us if they don't feel like it.
I took it as him not trusting his guys. They had a bad loss. He's done it after they've lost three times. That he doesn't know what his guys are going to say. Am I reading too much into that?
No, I think that's two ways of saying the same thing. He wants to control the message, right? So if they've lost, he wants to be the one explaining why they lost, and he doesn't want his players talking independently to reporters about why that might have happened. I mean, that's how I view it. You know, back when I started, which was in the dark ages of journalism, it was a much more collegial relationship between the media and the major college coaches. You know, there was some give and take, and they would get upset at us, and we would get upset at them, and we'd yell at each other, and then it would be over. And I think there was an understanding that they don't control us, and we're going to write what we write. But I think there was also a feeling that they needed us as a way to promote their product. And I don't know that they feel that anymore.
Ken Go of the Oregonian with us. I think one of the things you do exceptionally well is you've got range to your game. I think you can talk about almost anything. I want to shift to track and field. What's going on with Ben Lanana in track and field? Because for the non-diehard track and field person, you see his name pop up. Is he in a leadership position? Is he on the outs? What's going on with Lanana?
Yeah, I know it's a really weird situation. He's, you know, it's a sport that is not fared well in the new century, and really even in the years leading up to that. It used to be a mainstream sport back in the, you know, as late as the 1950s, 1960s, even the 1970s. It's not translated well to television, for one thing. And, you know, they stopped drawing even, you know, for home meets, really anywhere except Eugene. Lanana's he's a smart guy. He's a visionary. He's been successful at whatever he's done. He was a very good coach at Dartmouth and Stanford and Oregon. He's promoted meets well. He really took the Olympic trials for track and field and turned them into a sort of a must-see spectator event. So he has a vision and an idea of what he wants to do and how he wants to promote the sport and try to help it get back to the, if not the level it was at least to a level where it can hold its own with, you know, bowling or whatever. But he's sort of a bull in a china shop sort of guy. You know, he comes in and furniture gets broken and people get inconvenienced. And so he's always had that side to him. He ran for the USATF presidency, which is a volunteer position, but it does have carry with it some power to shape the direction of the organization. USA Track and Field is the umbrella organization for track and field in the United States that's not intercollegiate track and field. And he won by acclamation. In other words, there was a candidate, Olympian, Jackie Joyner Kersee, Olympic hero, but she withdrew when it was clear that she had no chance because the membership wants things to be shook up. And he came in to do that, but the board of directors, you know, which sort of sets the the governing body of USA Track and Field, was pretty comfortable with the way things were going. So they got into this give and take over what was going to happen. And they allege that Lanana had too many conflicts of interest based on his role with Eugene Organizing Committee that stages the Olympic trials in Eugene. And that he had been interviewed. Stop me if I'm going into too much detail, but
no.
It's a complicated situation. He was interviewed as part of an investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice into corruption in sports over a bid that he submitted that landed the 2021 World Outdoor Track and Field Championships for Eugene. There's been a lot of questions about that bid because the IAAF, which is the governing body of international track and field, awarded the bid to Eugene without going through a formal bidding process. It's like, surprise, a man of visit, surprise, Eugene has the games. So the USATF suspended Lanana or put him on what they call temporary administrative leave until questions about what happened or didn't happen in winning the 2021 World Outdoor Championships for Eugene are resolved. So that's sort of where we're at. This temporary administrative suspension now has lasted a year. Critics are saying that the board of directors has used this as a pretext to keep Lanana from coming in and shaking things up. And I guess it depends on whose version of events you want to believe. The bottom line is, though, the way they did it, to say that they're going to wait for a resolution of this case is sort of a cynical way to sideline him, because I think, as we know from watching this Mueller thing go on, the U.S. Department of Justice has not come out and announced people are cleared or something. It's just they don't do that. So the board of directors for USATF has sort of set an impossible bar for him to clear.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian with us. We just saw Oregon and Oregon State play a huge series in women's college basketball. What are the women's programs doing right at both schools that the men's programs haven't figured out?
They're winning. I think it's that simple. They're two top 10 programs. And, you know, you can argue about the differences in the game. There's some physiological differences between men and women that change a little bit how the game's played. The men's game is played above the rim. The women's game, for the most part, is not. But if you can get past those differences, the Oregon State and Oregon women play a very entertaining brand of basketball. You know, John Wooden, before he died, said he preferred the women's game because it was more the game that he wanted to coach, with passing and cutting and emphasis on team play, where the men's game is much more geared to individual athleticism. You know, that's part of it. I think ticket prices generally are cheaper for the women's game, so that helps too. And I think the women they've done a better job of outreach to fans. They get the fans involved in the games better than the men do. And they stick around. The average woman basketball player knows that she isn't going to go on and make millions of dollars playing professional basketball. So getting a degree is important for her. So she sticks around and does that. So fans have an ability to get to know the athletes.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian with us. Ken, before I cut you loose, the NBA mulling over a new rule that would lower the draft eligible age from 19 to 18. It would get rid of the one and dones. Does that help college basketball?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, why force a kid who's good enough to be drafted and win a spot on an NBA roster to spend a year at college? It's just he's not there to get an education. He's just there to bide his time until the NBA is allowed to draft him. And I don't think that does the college game any good. It feeds back into what we were talking about of the difference between the men's and the women's games. Let's have college basketball be for players who want to be in college.
Ken Go, you're great. I appreciate your range, your ability to talk just about anything.
Well, thanks, and thanks for having me.
You bet. There he is. Ken Go, the Oregonian. Follow him on Twitter. Read him on Oregon Live. Eugene listeners, I got something cool for you. There's a basketball game coming up. Eugene listeners, who I have a pair of women's basketball tickets to give away. This is for the women's basketball game coming up. These are courtesy of the Hope Project in Eugene. Caller number 10, Eugene listeners only. You have to pick them up at the KORE Fox Sports Eugene Studios by 5 o'clock today. Phone number to get them. Caller number 10, 541-343-KORE. Caller number 10 at 343-KORE in the 541 area code. You get a pair of tickets to the Oregon Ducks women's basketball game that's coming up. Leave it right here. I'm at the golf show. We're going to get some golf show flavor next.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.